Man, y'all are in for a treat this week with this guest, Dr. Ryan Ross. I am honored, privileged to be able to have this conversation on the mic for all of you. I met Dr. Ross in a very different version of me. This man who y'all will be hearing from is a father, a servant leader, a pillar of the community. And I met him through his work as president of the Urban Leadership Foundation of Colorado, right here. Getting to learn how to be a better leader from him and how to be a better version of me has changed my life in many, many ways that we don't need to talk about today, but has just brought me closer to who I am and what I'm meant to be doing. And so I'm glad that y'all get to hear about his story today and how he's moved into this space in his life and kind of what he's learned along the way. So Dr. Ross, thank you for being here because I definitely can't tell your bio for you. I would love if you could share some of your basics with the audience, including your sun, moon, and rising.
Well, you have to share your sun, moon, and rising first. That's just only appropriate. You know, we gotta go down this journey together since we're gonna start being vulnerable right away.
Oh no. Okay. See y'all, here we go. So I have a Gemini rising. This explains the podcast, but I'm a Scorpio sun and moon, which is everything else.
Yep. And I am a Leo rising and Aquarius moon and Leo rising, Aquarius moon, and Pisces sun. And I'm a Pisces. And so that's kind of dope.
It is dope. Pisces leaders, they just love so much. They do.
Yeah. That's very true. I wouldn't quite say I'm emotional, but I would say I'm super empathetic and I'm super, very much an empath and in tune with people's just kind of energy and needs, and that fuels my desire to help and serve. And so I think, you know, just in terms of a little bit about me, I'm a Denver native, born and raised in Denver, Colorado. And, you know, some would say, you know, I came from the other sides of the track. I'd say I came from the tracks I was supposed to come from. And so had some humble beginnings like many folks, and grew up in the 90s in Denver. And so Summer of Violence and some of those kinds of things in East Denver helped shape who I am and gave me a really interesting outlook on what life should look like, can look like, and some of the things that we should be doing. And so I am an athlete, played sports all my life. Had opportunity to, you know, play at Mullen High School in Colorado, which was a pretty big deal back then. I'm not sure now, you know, we haven't been winning the same way. So we need to have a Deion Sanders movement at Mullen High School and get it back together. But and then had the opportunity to go play in college and ultimately graduated from Nebraska Wesleyan University after having some injuries at the University of Nebraska. And you know, and that's how I kind of got on the college path. It was not about academics or sport. I mean, academics, it was very much about sports in the beginning. And then when I got to college, really found out about myself and my interest and wanting to serve. And once sports was taken away, I was left with, you know, time and space and the opportunity to figure out who I was and what I wanted to be. And so sometimes I think God does things for us. And so, you know, moving that focus of sports out my way really opened up my eyes into, I think, who I am today. So I don't know if that was a good intro or not, but that's a little bit about me. I'm a father. I think most importantly, I've got two dope kids, my son Gavin, my daughter Zoe. Of course, they have nicknames. So Gavin is Gavin the Leader. Mm-hmm. Zoe is Zoe the Brave. I really believe in names and speaking things into fruition. And so that, you know, that's what we do. We have affirmations every day. We have a lot of fun together. I'm an educator by trade, work in the community college system as the chief equity officer, chief student affairs officer. And then what I love most is serving as a president and CEO of the Urban Leadership Foundation of Colorado. That is, I think, my life's work. And it's all about emerging and arriving leaders, you know, having this collision course with themselves on what it means to be a leader and what it means to be impactful in the community. And so I have a ball doing that.
He does. I can report. Because it is a collision course, actually. That's a perfect way to describe it. Okay. No, but, you know, I'm just grateful. I've been able to experience it. And, you know, man, y'all don't understand the scope of the impact Dr. Ross has worked with. Hundreds of leaders in Denver and from Denver who've left. So, it's just awesome to be able to hear from someone who serves so graciously. All right, y'all. So Doc put some pressure on me with this episode. I'm not even going to lie to you. Because at first he was like, I thought we were doing it in person. And I was like, Doc, you know we're not doing it in person. And then he was like, this is going to be a tell-all. And I was like, okay, like we're going to do that too. And keep in mind, we've just been working together for 10 months. So he knows me, okay, y'all? But no, you know, also though, because I know he's a creative at heart too, and is a wise person and a speaker, that inspired me too, because, you know, he's here with time and energy, and we want to make it extremely innovative. We want to make it fresh. And so for this episode, for the first time, we're actually going to move through it in chapters. I proposed to Doc that, you know, we can talk about your experiences in three chapters so that we can really move through your leadership journey, just because, as we both know and you all know, it is a journey on purpose. That's that's the path to leadership. That is the path of leadership, is failing, winning, experiencing, and growing past it. So I hope y'all enjoy that. I think we'll make it fun. But it's like a book.
Absolutely.
And so chapter one, Doc. When I said first, when I proposed the chapters, what how did you think about chapter one?
You know, I thought about chapter one kind of, you know, as you see my vision and accountability graphic behind me. I'm really into superheroes. And so when we talked, you know, you sent me this and I was thinking about chapter one, I really thought about it as an origin story. Like, where do I come from? How did I get my superpower? Right. And you know, and what was that like? And so, and it was kind of cool to think about it that way, because I believe that all people are superheroes. And I think we all have a superpower that we have to, you know, tap into in order to be great. And so for me, that's how I thought about it. It was like, where did I really come from? Like, how did this, you know, how did this space, time, and the things that I'm doing, how did this manifest? Because it definitely wasn't by design, at least from my perspective in the beginning. I think God had a lot to do with that. He had everything to do with it, exactly, you know, and in all actuality. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, she, you know, and I refer to God as he and she, y'all. So if it confuses you, sorry. I just want to get it right. So when I get there, you know, if it's the big homie and he's like, yo, I'm like, cool. But if it's, you know what I'm saying, if it's the big sis, she gonna be like, cool too, right?
You will.
Like, so, and also I'm an ENFP. And so I'm sure this thing's gonna bounce all over the place.
I know, right? No, but it's okay.
But yeah, so, you know, like the origin story for me, man, I think the origin story really starts with my mom and my pops. They met in the military, and I was supposed to be born in Hawaii, but while my mom was pregnant, they moved her to Fitzsimmons, which was a army base here in Colorado. And it's messed up because she got moved literally 5 months into her pregnancy. So 4 more months and I'd have been like, you know, Ohana, you know what I mean? Like, I'd have been like Lilo and Stitch, you know what I mean? But now I'm like, you know, I'm Rocky Mountain tough, you know, four tough, Rocky Mountain strong or whatever you want to call it. Born in the D.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But my mom and dad, you know, they separated. Well, they didn't really separate. My dad stayed in the military. I was born in 1981 and 83. He left and because the military was all he had. And my mom was not a huge fan of staying in the military. I think it served this course, you know, served this purpose for her. And so she stayed in Denver and that changed our lives pretty drastically. We went from, you know, she went from having a stable relationship and dual income to now all of a sudden, you know, she's got me and my older brother. She's pregnant with my younger brother and we're in Montbello trying to figure it out and move from Montbello to East Denver. And if Colorado has a project, that's where I lived. I used to think we had a project. Then I went to like Philly and then I went to like Chicago. And I was like, wait a minute. We don't, what we have is not a project. We Mama, you did all right. Cause I just seen some real stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so that's where I grew up. And you know, later on there ended up being a stepdad in the picture. And he was really abusive. Everything that you can think of or imagine, it happened. Drugs, violence, domestic violence, abuse, all those kinds of things. And as that happened, I also received 3 other brothers and sisters. And so there's 6 of us. I have 6 siblings from my mom and then 3 from my dad. So 9 total, but here in Denver, 6 of us. And, you know, like we didn't have much. And so it was like, how do we get the nicer stuff? Like, I just wanted Frosted Flakes, not the white and brown box cereal. Right. Like I just, you know, I wanted to have nice shoes. I didn't want to go to school and be teased. And so that kind of being in survival mode led to a series of decisions. Right. And so some of those things were positive, some were negative. But I think they all shaped who I am. And so, you know, like many people being young and trying to figure out resources and wanting to have money, want to have nice things, got connected with some of the wrong people early on and found myself delivering packages and y'all know what I mean by packages. That's what I was delivering. You know, got connected with, you know, some of the cats who were involved in some of the gangs and, you know, and I was really just looking for family and an ability to thrive, a place to be seen. And those were the people who embraced me. And it, you know, just so happened that they also on a regular basis made poor choices. Mm-hmm. And so that really, for the longest time, that's just what I thought life was going to be. Like I was going to grow up and be a drug dealer. Like that was, and that was okay with me. I didn't see people who looked like me at school. You know, I know people don't like him now, but Bill Cosby, the Cosby Show was kind of my refuge. That and comic books and the story of King Arthur. But my reality was the street. And so that's just kind of what I did. You know, and it was helpful. You know what I mean? Local dude, you deliver packages, you got money. I could buy things for my brothers and sisters. And that it made sense to me. And, you know, it wasn't until a little later on when things got really tough and people start dying around me and going to funerals and drive-bys and those kinds of things like, yo, this isn't the life for me. Mm-hmm. And I got to do something about that. And so I mentioned that I was an athlete growing up. You know, I wasn't the best athlete in the beginning, but a lot of guys around me were, and some of them were being recruited to go play football out at Mullen High School. And I was like, hey, you know, if I can get out to Mullen, I'll get out the neighborhood. You know, that'll take a lot of stress off of my life and what I was thinking about, because I knew if I would have went to my neighborhood school Manual, just based on what was happening back then, I was like, man, I'm gonna die. Like, this is not, I can't go here. You know what I mean? Because at that time, I didn't have the courage and the ability to say no to some of the stuff I was involved in. And, you know, either, you know, you get down or lay down, right? Yeah. Like that was really true at that time. And so I decided I was going to try to go to Mullen. I didn't realize that Mullen was a private Catholic school where you have to pay, you have to take a test to get in, you have to do all these things. I just went out there one day like, hey, I want to go here. Mm-hmm. And this was like the summer between my eighth and ninth grade year. And it was kind of funny because still kind of rough around the edges. I show up, I go in the principal's office like, yo, I want to go to this school. He's like, who are you? I'm Ryan.
I am. Like, yeah.
What do you mean? You mean, I'm like, well, how do I register? And he's like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, I want to go to school here. He's like, son, it doesn't work that way. Did you apply? Did you have an application? I don't understand. Like, why are you here? Right. Like, that was really the conversation. And I was like, well, I'm here because I want to go to school here. So he's like, come with me, go to the office. They, you know, look up my name and stuff. Of course, my name isn't in there because it's my first time out there. And, you know, so then he kind of figures out that I have no idea what I'm doing. And he's like, look, in order to go to this school, you would have had to take a test last December. You would have to pass the test. You would have had to, you know, pay a deposit. You know, it costs this amount of money. I'm like, it costs to go to school. Mm-hmm. Like, you want me to pay you to come be bored and in a prison? You know, like, I'm supposed to be free. What do you mean? Yeah, I just want to play football. I don't want to go to school in my neighbor. And he's like, well, it doesn't work that way. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can try to take the test and come here next year. Well, I knew I didn't have that as an option. So it was like a period of 2 weeks where every day I showed up and talked to this dude with a different pitch, you know, and I'd have to catch the bus. It's like an hour and a half bus ride. Get off the bus. Like, yo, okay, so I really want to come here. What if I shovel the snow? And he's like, we have people who do that. And I'm like, but you'd have one extra. You know, like, they might get to go home early, save you some money. Like, it doesn't work that way. Mm. And so, seriously, after, like, I mean, I changed clothes. I was like, let me wear my church clothes out here. Like, let me try to figure this out. Yeah. And after 13 failed attempts, right?
Yeah,
I was like, all right, I'm gonna go one more time, and if this doesn't work today, I don't know what I'm gonna do. So I get off the bus, and you know, prior to this, every day I got there, I had to go find this principal. Mm-hmm. His name is Mr. Greco. I have to go find him, but this time he was waiting for me. So I get off the bus, I see him across the street, and he's waving me over to come here. But then I also see two police cars in front of the school. And I'm like, ha ha. No, you're not going to put the banana in the tailpipe. You're not going to trick me. No, it's not happening. Nope. I'm on public property. I'm across the street. Nope, not coming over there. Mm-hmm. I know how this works. No, thank you. Mm-hmm. I don't need any police contact. It's not going down like that. Yeah. And he's like, what? Ryan, come here. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm good. And so I'm like, all right, this dude, I can't believe he done called the police on me. Like, I just trying to go to school. Like, this is messed up.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to look, and when the school is, you know, it kind of sits off in a little area, and there's a really busy street, Hampden Avenue, right next to it. So I'm like, all right, if I got to run, you know, I'm trying to plot out which way I got to go. Like, there's a little swamp area in the back at that time. So I'm like, all right, I can get through those trees. Yeah, they won't find me there. And then I can get to the middle of the street. And, you know, if I got to get into the middle of the street and stop traffic, that's what it's going to be. But I'm not going to jail. It's not happening today. And so as I'm kind of going through all of this in my head, I see the officers come out. They get in their cars and they drive away. So then I'm like, OK, what does this mean? Mm-hmm. And you know, people got to understand at this time, you know, for me in my neighborhood, police were not a good thing.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't just like, oh, you see the police. Hey, officer, how you doing? You know, that I didn't have that privilege. You know what I mean? That it meant something totally different. So as they pulled away, I'm like, all right, are they going around the block to get me? And then finally he's, what are you doing? Please come here. And I'm like, all right, dear God, please don't make me punch this old white man. Right. Like, that's what I'm saying. I'm saying to myself, like, I don't know what's about to happen.
Yeah.
And so I kind of reluctantly go over, and he's like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I thought you called the police on me. He was like, well, why would I do that? I was like, 'cause that's what y'all do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, white people call the police on black people. Like, that was just kind of how I felt and what I experienced, you know, in most circumstances at the time. So he just kind of laughed and was like, no, there's somebody I want you to meet. He ends up introducing me to a guy named Larry Byrne, who was this kind of, you know, established and well-off business owner who's from Chicago, lives in Colorado, and decided he wanted to, like, figure out how to give back, wanted to do something. Mm. And so at the time, he was trying to figure out what that would be. And what ended up happening was he ended up paying for me to go to Mullen High School through a foundation he created. At that time, it was called the Byrne Foundation. And now it morphed into involved into a large organization called Denver Kids. Mm-hmm. But so I was the first of seven in this program. And so all I had to do was, you know, agree to have a mentor, agree to have my grades decent, and, you know, and agree to put some skin in the game, right? Just, you know, come up with some money for the registration fee. And so that was like, this was June of 1994. Mm. And, you know, June 11th, 1994, I delivered my last package. Mm. Never forget that day because I needed $350 to pay the registration fee.
Yeah.
And so I went and, you know, and talked to the guys in my neighborhood, told them what I was doing. And, you know, he who shall not be named, because that's not what we do, was like, get this package delivered. And, you know, and essentially was supportive, like, good luck. But, you know, if I see you back out here, you know, it's going to be something. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think you're supposed to be something. You're not supposed to be out here. Mm-hmm. And so, like, that was kind of the first time I really thought about leadership, right? Like, in that moment, he was leading, even though some people may say that he was a negative person just because of the lifestyle he was leading. He very much showed me empathy, very much poured into me at that point, saying like, hey, you're meant for something better. So go do it since you have the opportunity to. And that's how I ended up going into Mullen. And then, you know, a lot of things shifted gears from that point. Kind of found a new peer group, guys who I'm still friends with today. Went face to face with racism, right? Mm-hmm. Being feeling like a raisin in a bowl of milk, being one of several young Black men in a campus full of rich, affluent white folks, mm-hmm. and some folks with some different mindsets. Very, very early, you know, having to navigate how do you deal with somebody who wears a Confederate belt buckle to school. Mm-hmm. Right. And looks at you differently. How do you navigate the hallways when there are guys who maybe appreciate your athletic ability, but, yeah. you know, they're giving you the side A because they don't want you to date their friends, you know, yeah. that kind of stuff. But, you know, like, well, how do you get through that? And so that experience taught me a lot about myself, taught me a lot about problem solving, taught me a lot about how much I love my culture and how much more important it became when suddenly I was in a place where I didn't have access to it on a regular basis. Mm. So, so that was kind of the origin story. I don't know. I feel like I'm just talking and I feel like I need to pause or something. I don't know. You got a commercial break or something you need to take? Like,
Oh my God, this man. Yeah. Of course you're going to talk and talk. We're on the podcast. He's like, okay, we're gonna stop. No, we're gonna.
Yeah, you know, I've got to pause for the cause. Make sure, you know, man, you might want to get a question in because, you know, I'm going into my second closing. You know what I mean? So it means I got a couple more. But
oh my God, he does be closing like that, y'all.
Oh man, but yeah, no. So, but that's how I got to Mullen, and then the guys that I went to school with, you know, it was really cool because we all came from the same neighborhood. There are about 10 of us who went out there together. And that formed our own little village, right? And it was that experience. I tell my friends all the time that they really saved my life because until I met them, the other peer group, even though I knew who those guys were loosely through sports and through community, the other guys who I was hanging with, you know, they were straight up, you know, they were active, you know, they were gangbanging. And you know, my cousin, who's in prison, you know, was who I looked up to. And so, you know, having this new peer group, having to figure out those new dynamics, being the youngest one in the group and, you know, and having guys who were focused on like, hey, we want to win a championship. We're going to go to college. Like I had never really had those kinds of conversations before. And like finding those dudes, you know, really helped solidify for me what it means to have a village. Right. And what it means to understand that, you know, the sum is greater, you know, than the individual. And we really latched onto that dream together. And, you know, and I'm proud to say that, you know, we all made it. Like, you know, here we are 25 years later, you know, and you've got, you know, coaches and project managers and college administrators and business owners and, you know, and we're all just little boys from the East Side in Park Hill who, you know, the mathematics say maybe we shouldn't be here. Mm-hmm. And so, and now we are now men and we're, you know, our kids are growing up together, right? Like just the power of a village is so, so important. And having, you know, like true day ones, people be like, that's my day one. I'm like, no, I got real day ones. Like people who I've been friends with, you know, for 35 years, you know, and we're still rocking. And experiencing life and sharing milestones together, like that was incredible. And then taking that kind of that mindset, even in the college, like, hey, I need a tribe, right? I need a village. So I'm in this new place, this new city, who's going to be my village. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, that helped me think about my fraternity. Right. Mm-hmm. And so then I got to, you know, become a Kappa and get a new village. And, you know, and again, here I am now 20 years removed from that experience. And now I've got this village of fraternity brothers. I got this village of day one people. And so just to feel surrounded and safe at all times and to be able to have conversations about being vulnerable, conversations about deconstructing what it means to be a man, as we now raise our children and we look at being vulnerable, we look at accessing the importance of mental health, you know, knowing that it's okay not to be okay. And how do we deal with those kinds of things? How do we check in on each other for real? Not just that, sup, you good? Yeah, I'm good. Like, man, I'm so glad we don't have conversations like that anymore. Because we can actually help each other live, right? Mm. And live in a way where we can thrive. So, yeah, man. So, I think that's the origin story. I don't know. I mean, am I missing something or something else you want to know? Like, you know, like this is it, you know. You know, and I think the only other part of the origin story that I'll share is just that through my friends, right? Like because of my home life was so traumatic, their parents really became my parents, mm-hmm. right? Because my father was overseas in the military, so I didn't have access to him on a daily basis. A great father, and I had access to him, but again, he was in Thailand and Indonesia and all those places mm-hmm. serving our country. So it was my friend's parents who also kind of helped me figure out that, yo, you got to tap into the elders. Mm. They have a wealth of knowledge. And so sometimes when my friends be like, oh my God, that's my mom. I'd be like, oh my God, tell me something, mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I knew that information was important, and it was information that sometimes I didn't always have access to. And then I also learned that in that situation, right, picking and having that new peer group and having access to their parents and things like that, I learned very quickly that you don't get to choose who you're related to, but you do get to choose who your family is. Yeah. And you can have as many family members as you want, you know, in terms of how you identify and connect with people. And that's what I think became my super strength, mm-hmm. is being able to connect with people and understand how I could be helpful and also understand what I needed in order to be whole from those folks. So,
oh my God, I've heard bits and pieces of this, but never the whole thing, the way he just told it. And it makes so much sense. Let me tell you why. First, your persistence. What I heard when you talked about how you tried and then did make your enrollment possible at Mullen. How many times would someone else have stopped? And it's crazy because I'm reading right now Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. One of the things he talks about so much in that book is persistence, because persistence makes it more likely that you will catch a break because you're still going. And the break, you caught that is now a legacy in Denver. I mean, absolutely a divine ordinance. But also with your emphasis on community and who's around you, who your board of directors is and your space, that's exactly what I feel like I gained from the Urban Leadership Foundation, because I too, from, well, most of my life to date, was always the raisin in a bowl of milk. And to now have a community where that affirms who I am and what who I want to serve, that never existed. And that is really a function of who I got to learn from around me and who is supporting me, which was provided through the fellowship. So I take from that, man, we are so much who we spend our time with.
For sure. Show me your friends, I'll show you your future every time. Every time.
Yeah. Yeah, y'all. We're talking to you too, but no, it's that, I mean, even after pretty fresh after school too, that's been a huge focus for me. It's just, you know, maintaining relationships and, you know, putting myself in relationship with the people I know that can support me wholeheartedly. So
yeah.
Man. Speaking of relationships. So that's chapter one, the origin story. You know, as you mentioned, it's so divine. We have no idea, you know, especially in the like more ignorant part of life where you're really like going, you're growing up and you haven't critically thought yet or had the chance to or even been taught. All of that can either, you can say you are the victim of it, or you can rise and take responsibility for it and move forward how you want to. And so you did that, and it led you to football and this amazing career you have now. I don't want to jump to chapter three yet because I'm excited for that chapter two. But in chapter two, because I'm curious, oh, I know a little about this one too, which you got to share with the audience. How did you, after you graduated, and now, okay, you understand where you're going somewhere. How did you navigate that space? And what's the title of this chapter? Chapter two.
The title of chapter two, I'm gonna have to borrow from a song, but I think it's Ain't Nobody Messing With My Click.
Oh.
Right. Like, and I chose that because, you know, like you just said, you are who you hang around. And, you know, I've had the ability and I've been blessed to be around some really amazing people, but as an adult, really figure out how to maximize that and make that work for me, and also how to add people to the team. And so because of my network and because of the people who support me, you know, I am the person who I am today. And I know that unapologetically. Like, people poured into me when I didn't have the ability to pour into myself, and just made themselves available. Right. And they did it, you know, at no cost. Right. They didn't want anything in return. These were people who just, you know, saw something in me, or just be, you know, they were just the kind of people who said, hey, you know, I'm gonna do the right thing because of who I am and not because who's watching. And right now the right thing is to invest in this young person. And, you know, my first job came because of literally somebody believed in me. Right. Like when I got back. So when I actually the semester before I graduated from college, I actually started to freak out, like just like almost literally have a meltdown because, you know, at that point I was looking up, graduation was 3 months away, and I was telling myself, yo, I did everything they told me to do, but now I have no plan.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm about to get this degree. Yep. I don't have a job. Mm-hmm. You know, I didn't have any major prospects. And that's twofold, right? One of that is, again, understanding that when we go on these college campuses, we have to create agency for ourselves. And we have to understand that even though they want us to assimilate into these environments, we have to be who we are.
Yeah.
And we have to find the individuals who want to see us do well, right? And what I mean by that is, you know, I wasn't getting the conversations of, hey, you know, come to the meeting the night before the job fair where the companies are actually taking people out to dinner and actually picking who's going to get the jobs and having, you know, some person call somebody on my behalf and using nepotism to put me in a situation to have a job and be real. Right. And so, you know, and I'm not mad at that at all. Right. Like, in fact, I embraced it and I use it in everything that I do now. I very much believe in nepotism. I do believe in sponsorship and being in situations where you can do that for others or give others access to it. But at that time I didn't have it. Or at least I didn't know that I had it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm like, all right, what am I supposed to do? Like, you know, I'm about to graduate. And, you know, I was one of those people, and I am one of those people. Well, I like to experience things, right? And so yeah. My senior year, I needed to save some money. I always was curious about a trailer home. Mm-hmm. So I got a double wide trailer, 300 Blue Flame Road. Me and my roommate, we were like, let's go live in this trailer. We lived in a trailer for $250 a month.
Nice.
A double wide. And but when you're thinking about your life and you're like, I'm 20 years old. I live in a trailer. I'm about to graduate from college. I don't have a savings. I can't move home because my mom lives in the projects and you can't live there after a certain age.
Yeah.
Or otherwise it could jeopardize the housing stability of my brothers and sisters. You know, like, what does this mean? I'm like, all of a sudden, everything that I thought was going well, I was like, actually, my life's a shit show. I have no plans. What am I supposed to do?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, if PG-13, sorry about that. You use the word there, but that's how I felt, right? And I was like, well, what do I do? And so graduation came. I had to load up my little Lumina, you know, grab my clothes, my puppy.
You had a puppy?
I had a puppy, Diamond, little pit bull.
Oh.
My heart. And so we came back to Denver. So I'm moving in with my aunt who had a house, and I was trying to figure it out, starting applying for jobs, that kind of thing. And, you know, found a job like working in corrections. That didn't last very long because I would have to file conflicts of interest like every day because somebody would come in and ready to go on parole or probation and they need a case manager. But I would know them. They'd be like the homie.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, they come in and I'd be like, you know, I'm walking down the hall. They'd be like, oh, what up, Sleepy? What's going on? I'm like, no, don't say it out loud. No. Like, you just messed it up for both of us. Like, I could have helped you.
Yeah.
Now they know that I know you. I got to file this conflict of interest. Yeah. And so needless to say, that job didn't last long. Mm-hmm. But I was watching TV one morning and Norm Early, who has passed away, may he rest in peace, was a district attorney in Colorado years ago. And he was on the news talking about a case or something. But in that conversation, he talked about, you know, the next generation of, you know, Black leaders and, you know, and how people like him, it was their responsibility to help and reach out. I was like, okay, let's see if he's telling the truth.
Mm.
I got his name out the phone book. Right. And for those of you who don't know what a phone book is, because that's what we used to have back then before Google gave us everything. It's this book and it has numbers for all the, you know, residential is the white pages. Right? But I found his name in the phone book and I called him, cold called him like, yo, hey, Mr. Early, my name's Ryan Ross and senior TV. I just moved back from college. You know, like, I need a job, bro. And amazingly, he was like, hey, let's meet. And he met with me at the Denver Athletic Club and asked me what I wanted to do. And literally while we were sitting there, made a phone call to Donna Holteen at Denver Kids and said, I have your next employee. And man, a week later, I was working at Denver Kids, working in education, my first education job, being able to give back to kids from my community. But the road to that point was literally tapping into the village.
Yeah.
Right. And letting the village work for you.
Yeah.
And being humble and going to do a really good job after, you know, after having that opportunity. And then so many other experiences like that began to happen because I started to really understand the value of creating, you know, this real round table of people who could support you. And so my relationship with former Mayor Wellington Webb, who in my opinion will always be the mayor, he's the people's mayor, people's champ. And he's also a good brother of Kappa Alpha Psi. We begin to connect and I begin to be mentored by him. And, you know, and very quickly you learn sitting in a room with people like this who've lived life, right? No matter what their station is, whether they're elected officials or just, you know, a vending machine owner, or just somebody chilling, waiting on the bus, the knowledge and the gems that they drop, if you spend the time to listen and pick them up, it will change your life in ways you can't even imagine. And so that's what I really did. I started just like, I became a student of people, right? I wanted to learn what people who have been on this road before me, what they knew. And oddly enough, I've also figured out that these folks actually wanted to share, but people just didn't engage, right? They want to share this information. They've got it and they want to give it. And so I'm like, I'm here for it. I'm going to take it all. And, and so that's kind of like the evolution for me in terms of relationships. It's, you know, it's now it's about learning, but it's understanding, okay, what's the reciprocation, right? You're going to invest into me this knowledge or time. What is it that I'm giving back to you? You know, and some people it was the gift of listening. Others it was, you know, now I'm running some errands for you. You know, whatever the case may be, you know, in some instances, hey, I'm a man by the name of Mr. Fitz, an older gentleman who passed away. I'd go sit with him and in return, I'd just take out his trash. Once a week, I'd come over and take out his trash because, you know, he has some mobility issues. But that's all he wanted, right? But the things that I learned sitting with him are things that are foundational into what I consider to be the traits of me as a man, right? And me as a person. And so, you know, that's what I started doing with the relationships and then trying to find people around me who would then listen so I could pass it on to. And so naturally, Mayor Webb seen that in me and said, hey, you know, this is something that I want you to do in terms of going through the, at that time, the Chamber Connect program, asking me to assess it and come back with some thoughts and putting together myself and Carrie Warren and a couple others to say, hey, this is going to be your legacy. I want you to do this work.
What year was that, Doc?
This was 2008.
It's 2022.
It's 2022. So here we are.
It's literally your legacy. Okay, I'm jumping ahead. Okay.
Yeah. 15 years in the game doing this work, investing in people. Right. Like that's been super powerful. And then, you know, the power of being in community, right? Like I've gotten so many opportunities because, you know, I think it's because I'm putting the right energy out into the universe and connecting with people. But that creates a situation where I'm in the private, corporate or educational setting. People respect who I am and know who I am and know the kind of support that I have in the community, which actually bolsters my presence behind some of these other doors. And that's a really good feeling to know that, you know, I get to come in young, I get to come in black, I get to come in, you know, 6'1", 260 pounds, and not have to worry about people trying to throw their isms my way because they're more terrified of the positivity and community that I bring with me. And I don't take that for granted. That's definitely been my saving grace in a lot of situations.
Oh my gosh. The relationships.
Absolutely.
It is the relationships.
It is. Relationships and service. You know, I've met another mayor in Nebraska, Lincoln, Nebraska, Mayor Don Wesley, back in the day, because Juneteenth wasn't a holiday and it was something that we wanted to accomplish there as a group, my fraternity, and being able to do community service project where I didn't know who Mayor Wesley was, but we, you know, we're out planting trees in the Malone Center Park together all day. And by the end of the day, we, you know, finally kind of introduce ourselves and have time to relax after hard work all day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, oh, well, I'm Ryan Ross. Oh, I'm Don Wesley. You the mayor? Man, I've been trying to find you. I've been trying to meet you. They won't let me in your office. Probably because I was going to the office after football practice with ice packs and hoop shorts on. But, you know, I was still young then. I'm still evolving. But through service, though, we got together, right? And that led to a variety of things, one of which was Juneteenth becoming an official holiday in Lincoln, Nebraska, and the Brothers of Kappa Alpha Psi of the Eta chapter really being a part of that and really being the catalyst for it with that because of service, right? Like, so I also believe service is a great equalizer. When you're serving, there's no titles, there's no posturing, like it's just helping. Yes. And that breaks down rooms and barriers because now there's no separation, if you will. You know, there's no I'm up here, you're down there. So we're all in this getting our hands dirty together, and you can develop some pretty significant relationships just from serving.
Because you're aligning with your purpose, with a purpose.
Yep.
And then you're with other people who are aligned to that same purpose, of course. And when you are driven by service, of course, you're concerned with making it better. And so the connection is unspoken.
Mm-hmm.
And your story, man, it is the power of one, but the power of many at the same time. The power of one, like sponsor, for example, or mentor, mm-hmm. who can recognize how much they have to give service, how much they have to give someone can offer, and how that doesn't cost anything, especially when, you know, you're in a secure place or you've had your experience and so on. But then at the same time, the power of so many, because I know, especially for me, I used to be such a, well, I'm still working on it, y'all, I'm not perfect, but such a, like, I can do it myself, like, willpower woman, make it happen, don't need any help. And just how toxic and really just a manifestation of my earlier trauma that is, and how much of a disservice I'm doing myself when I don't invest in my community and also build one and serve in it too, mm-hmm. which probably explains why I'm in Boulder, but that's okay. I'm gonna be in Denver soon. So,
so we can do this in person next time because you'll be close. You won't be 47 minutes away without traffic.
I know, right? I know. That's a whole other thing, y'all. But no, I mean, and just to like, even since I started ULF, the exact nepotism is a word for it. Really just support of one another and the nurturing of relationships. I could tell that exact story and how it's become a purpose. And none of us can do that without each other. And I did not appreciate that fact enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the greatest. I mean, you know, the village is the greatest gift that we've ever had, but it's the most overlooked present that we, you know, we've ever received at the same time, you know. And I laugh at people who say, oh, I did this all by myself. No, you didn't. You know, from the very beginning, somebody, some amazing woman gave birth to you.
Yeah.
You didn't do this thing by yourself, right? Somebody, even when you didn't know it, intervened for you when you were in school behind a closed door and said, hey, no, this is a good kid. Don't do whatever you're thinking about doing. Like, there's so many times people stand in the gap for us and we don't even know it. And then, you know, it's only amplified by the times that we do know it.
Yes.
So we have to take pause in that and really be thankful for that gift. And then try to do that for other people.
Oh, we're doing it for other people. It's a gift to be able to do that for other people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we all have different ways to do it, right? I mean, you're doing it every day through the work that you do, this podcast, the way you connect with people, the way you share your energy, right? Like, that's dope, right? When you come into a room, when you leave, it's much brighter. The air is lighter, aww, right? Like, that's a gift to be able to give to people. And so thank you for that.
Stop. I already told you about the Scorpio placement.
Hey, man, you know, that's that Leo just letting you know how it is.
Literally. Oh, man. Y'all, man, we cannot. Man, you have no idea how this single person, with the support of this community, which is what ULF is, has just changed my life, man. Okay. Back to your story, Doc. Yeah, we're both ENFPs, y'all, so thank you for your patience. But with Mark... What marked the transition from chapter 2 to 3? And what's the title of chapter 3 for you?
So chapter 3 is really, I struggle with chapter 3 in terms of a title.
Because it's right now.
Because it's the present. Mm-hmm. And it's evolving. And so, I called it reflection. Mm-hmm. And the reason why I did that, because every day when you look in the mirror, you see yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And it's, and if you actually stop and give yourself like 10 seconds to just look at yourself and really be present with yourself, that's what this time is like, right? It's about seeing where you are and understanding if you're living in your truth, if you are who you want to be and what you're doing about that every day. Right. Cause I don't think that people, find their passion and just keep it, right. Like, I think it's something that, you have to look at, you have to think about, you have to tap into your village because, you know, for a variety of reasons, sometimes, you know, we run out of gas.
Yes.
And, you start running out of gas, you can't fuel that purpose, right? Like that power begins to change, right? It begins to dwindle and you lose sight of why you're there. Mm. And that is something that I think about constantly. Mm. Because, you know, I've been in that situation where I had to literally get refueled, right? Even in the work that I do with Urban Leadership Foundation, right? Like,
yeah.
Sometimes it gets daunting. Sometimes it gets old. Sometimes you don't see the success that you want to see, or you don't get the appreciation that you feel like the organization deserves.
Yeah.
To really be helpful, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're just like, eh, maybe it's time. You know, maybe it's run its course, mm-hmm. and you know that answer is no, but you just don't have the petrol, right? And so you have to find it, and so. That's what this chapter is about. It's just about constant reflection. It's about constant work. And it's about the hard work of maintaining the ability to thrive, right? Even more important than success is the ability to thrive. Mm. And that's hard work. Like, you don't just get that. You have to do the work. And so when I think about that, it helps me think about my time, right? Mm. So my time used to be work, 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 family, work, 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 family. And then you're like, oh my God, I'm in the hospital. I need an IV. I'm about to break down and go crazy.
Yes.
And so I had to redefine what that looks like, right? And redefine what taking time for myself looks like, and understanding that, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've heard hurt people hurt people. Well, weak people can't pick up people, and strong people without gas are ineffective, right? Like, no matter how you put it, the reality is if you don't take care of you, you can't do anything else.
Yeah.
Right. And so we have to understand the power of selfishness. Mm. I know that sounds crazy, but we have to be selfish for ourselves. So we can continue to be a blessing or help or just exist in true presence with everyone else. And so now I do that every day. You know, I take time to think. Mm-hmm. You know, I used to, you know, kind of pride myself in being so busy I couldn't think, because that means I just got it going on. No, I have to have time to think. You got to be able to think about what's next and what's going on. Got to have time to meditate. You got to have time to reflect. You got to have time to think about your energy. Mm-hmm. And that's different for everybody, but you got to find ways to do that, right? Like, and so for me, like, one, you know, I'm one of those people, you know, I mean, I keep certain things around, yes, to just help me think about and channel. You know, I got all kinds of little different ones, you know, they, literally. But these things, you know, help me stay centered. Like, you know, the things are, I keep certain things really close. Mm-hmm. Because I need that, because it's the way I refuel myself, and it's okay and it's important. And so I spend, you know, at least an hour and a half a day, you know, fueling myself through, whether it's meditation, whether it's thinking about, you know, the healing power of nature, mm-hmm, whether it's, you know, studying my Bible or having conversations about religion, just sitting with myself. I have to do that. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I have to do is connect with my family. My kids are my everything, right? And so, you know, and they're my why. And so, you know, you have to spend time with your why, because that fuels you. Yeah. And so no matter what else I've got going on, leadership-wise, business-wise, work-wise, from an entrepreneurial perspective or whatever, none of that happens unless I do that selfish piece first. Yeah. And I'm really unapologetic about that and very intentional about that at this point in my life. And I'm not afraid of the word no. And in fact, I believe that the word yes is a bad word. And you can be assassinated by the word yes. You can literally be assassinated by it if you don't balance it, understand what it comes with, and understand your capacity. So, you know, that's, you know, for right now, when I think about my time, that's what's most important, is that I'm taking that time for myself.
Yeah.
I think one of the things you asked about this chapter was, what do I love most about what I do? I think. And I think what I love most about what I do is this right here, right? Mm-hmm. Like, having the ability to connect with new people who want to live in their purpose, who are like-minded, and to know that I get to be a part of their samba line, if you will, right? Like, I get to be a part of their journey. And I'm careful about the word journey, because I'm actually going through a transition with that word also right now.
Okay.
You know, because, like, journey implies that you have to go somewhere.
True.
And I don't know that you have to go somewhere as much as you have to be happy with where you are.
Yeah, you have to be.
Right?
Yeah.
You have to be, you know what I mean? So for me, it's like, do I want to go on a journey, or do I want to dance?
Yeah.
Right.
Play.
And think about the fulfillment you get, like, when you dance, right? Like, you're free, you're flowing, you're happy, you're connecting, right? Very different than the thought. And I'm a little extra when I do these kinds of things, but, like, the thought of a journey, right? So when I think about the journey, like, I'm thinking about King Arthur and Knights at the Round Table, and I'm like, you know, I don't know if I want to go slay a dragon. Right. I think I just want to dance.
March for 30 days. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, and, you know, do I slay the dragon, or do I dance and make the dragon so happy the dragon wants to come into my circle and dance with me?
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so, again, that's what this reflection time is about. Like, okay, how do we evolve? You know, how do we do this just a little bit better? Like, how do we get better at this every day? And I think a lot of that comes with the constant shifting in how we think about things. I think the journey was really important for me in the beginning. And now it's the dance that I think takes me to the next place.
The dance, the space for yourself, the patience.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the fuel.
Yeah.
Ooh,
yeah.
That fuel. You're so right.
You know, and then when you start thinking about the things that keep you up at night, right? Like, man, if you're up all night thinking about something, the last thing you want to do is get up and feel like you got to go journey.
Yeah.
Right. I want to be up all night and be like, you know what? Let me dance through this. Right. Let me find the answer in being free and being open and being happy and being adjusted and being, you know, checking in on myself And then when I'm thinking about all the isms and challenges of the world, and the things that I can be helpful with, you know, I'm in a better place mentally to think about the role I can play in those kinds of things. So,
and a huge, all right. You know, Doc, you know, something I don't, we haven't gotten to talk about yet, but we're about to talk about it now. I'm especially curious from you is like, what do you want to see become here in Denver, in Aurora, and with ULF? Like, what do you dream about in that regard or in, and in your life in general?
Yeah. So my dreams. Wow. Well, I think in terms of, you know, to kind of answer it in the order you gave it, in terms of Denver and the city, my dream is pretty simple. It's Black people thriving like everybody else does. Yeah. Right? Like I want, you know, I don't want to go in rooms and hear people say, well, we can't find Black talent because it's everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. I don't want young Black talented, gifted professionals and people to feel silenced. I want them to be appreciated for who they are. And that's tough for me because I always like to say, well, I'm young. I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I think I might be old now.
you do that.
Like, oh, shoot. Am I a young person or am I an old person? I'm not sure. I think I have a foot in both worlds. You know, my shoe game keeps me young. My shoe game keeps me young. My hair game, I got hang time that keeps me young. No, but
you have a sense of humor too, because you best believe, like, yeah.
So, you know, but I feel like I have a place now in some of these rooms where I get to tell the older folks or the old guard to move out the way and to make space and be that lead fullback for younger folks. And so I dream of thriving for Black folks, because I think that in a large sense, everyone else already thrives. Right. Mm-hmm. And so we need to catch up, and I want that to be something that just is, and not something that we're constantly fighting for.
Yeah.
You know, I want to be able to be in a place where, you know, we have something like where, help me with her name. She just got released from Russia. Brittany
Griner.
Brittany Griner. I want to be in a place where people understand why Black folks in particular are so excited that she's out, right? It's not political. It's that finally in this country, the president of the United States, the highest ranking person in this country, made space to support a Black woman.
Mm-hmm.
That's so huge.
Yes.
Because it doesn't happen. It hasn't happened. Mm-hmm. And the fact that it happened is a big deal. It has nothing to do with politics. It has nothing to do with who got traded for her, the arms dealer or whatever the case may be. Like, fine, I get that. There's people who are upset about that. But I need everybody to understand the power and excitement behind saying finally.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we chose a Black woman because Black women have put this country on their back and have made it what it is. And so, you know, mm-hmm. I had a bunch of Facebook exchanges yesterday where it's just like, look, believe what you want to believe. That's fine. I'm cool. I'm not judging you, but you're not going to steal my joy in this moment. Right. And I'm going to take this win for Black women and for Black people. And so anyways, again, there goes that closing thing. I was about to go on to another tangent. But my dream is to see us thrive, right? Yeah. Like, we deserve it. We've earned it. We need it. It's our right. It's not a privilege, right? It's our right to thrive.
It is.
So that's what I want to see kind of, you know, in the city, in the state, and in the country for the Urban Leadership Foundation. I want to see us get fully staffed.
Yeah.
I want to see us continue to grow. I have a vision for the organization to grow across the Midwest and then across the country. And I really want to see that happen. Mm-hmm. And also from a funding perspective, also to see us grow to a place that we're also a funder.
Yeah.
Where we're funding, you know, so having access to amazing alumni and professionals like yourself is great, but being able to have access to you and then saying, hey, here's your dream, here's your purpose. We want to get behind it and fund it so you can get it done. So that would be amazing. And then in my personal life, you know, I just want to drink my water, mind my business, and watch my kids grow up and be amazing. Aww. Like, that's it. I'm a really simple dude when it comes down to it at its core. I just want my kids to thrive, and I want them to have experiences that I never had. And I want to see them take our family to the next level, right? And really get us in this rhythm of every generation, is better than the one that's come before it. And we change our mindset to, you know, instead of living up to the expectation of the ancestors to thinking about, hey, I'm going to be an ancestor.
Right.
So I'm going to live really great. So the people that follow me, you know, have a blueprint and have a leg up and a step up.
Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
More money, resources in the hands of Black people, more consistently thriving Black communities, more leaders. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, we got a lot of work to do.
We do.
It's happening.
But we're built for it.
It's happening.
Ready for it.
It is already happening. This is one of those. This is part of it. Mm-hmm. All of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It'll be funny to look at this in a year, Doc. And see how things have shaken out.
Yeah. It will be.
My last question for you is what do you want to make sure listeners take away from this episode? Because you gave eight lessons. Which one do you think, or another one, do you think could impact anyone who's looking to build something, is aligning with their purpose, is starting out or finding motivation to keep going? What has helped you the most with that?
So I'm a drop the title for my book that is in the works. And what I want to leave you with is a question, and that is, who's sitting at your round table? And that question is very strategic and intentional, right? It's not just a table, right? It's your round table. There's a reason that the table's round. Because there's no points at it. It means nobody's at top. Nobody's on the top or bottom. Everybody's equal. And the village is equal when it comes to supporting you. So who's sitting at your round table? And are you ready to sit at the table yourself? That's what I want to leave you with. Two questions to consider, to ponder, to think about. And, you know, and at the time that this book gets done, you're like, hey, I thought about those questions. I'm gonna get the book. You know, support your boy when that comes out. I'm hoping to release that in 2023. I'm working really hard to get it done.
This is going to be released in 2023. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, oh man, Doc, first off, I hope you're at my round table.
I'm there if you put me there. That's what's great about it. You get to put who's at your round table.
Oh yeah. Oh, don't worry about that then. No, I'm kidding. But no, not don't worry about that. But I mean, man, absolutely. That is the sum of it all. The round table can be the best or worst thing.
Well, the worst thing is not having a table.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but yeah, you know. And your table evolves. So yes, I'm trying to get that. I'm trying to get that work done. It's tough because there's so much to say. And, you know, like, oh no, wait, this will be another book. I got to focus. I got to get back in.
Oh no.
My writing is very much ENFP right
now. Yeah. It's like I know how that goes.
Yep. I kind of feel like I need to do it like this. Like, I just need to sit down and have like an 8-hour conversation and pour the book out and then go back and transcribe it. Cause just writing it, my mind goes everywhere. So I've been thinking about that. Like, I think I just need to sit down and have like 3 or 4 hour conversations, and the book will come out that way. So
I can totally see that being the right way for you. That's amazing. Well, thank you for sharing that on the show. We are going to be, when that, all that happens, best believe that working with them will be blasting it. Because as our purpose has evolved, man, this is really just a space to highlight Black leadership. Because Black leadership doesn't get highlighted enough. And Black leaders have so much more work to do and weight to deal with. And it always makes for the most insightful stories, in my humble opinion. And so I just want to thank you for coming on the show and sharing your Pisces, Aquarius, Leo, ENFP, Doc, Kappa, ULF, Chief Equity Officer perspective with us, which is really just Ryan.
Right on. Appreciate it. Yeah, I didn't even get on my equity kick today. That'd be another show.
It'll be another, because this is just the beginning. So.
Yep. And I'm excited. As we were talking, the UPS truck came. So I got two big boxes out. So I know they're my chairs. So I'm setting up, gearing up for my podcast. Yep. So it's the Real with Ross podcast. And so taking some of the 2-minute themes I talk about and stringing those into conversations with people. So it's going to be called Real with Ross, Extraordinary Things by Everyday People. So I'm turning my living room area or a piece of my living room just into the set. And this is going to be there. And I'm going to shoot my 2-minute videos from there from now on and going to launch the podcast. And so I'm excited. So that's, I'm looking forward to that, to, you know, get that going. And I'm a, God willing, I'm going to do a season a month.
You just, are.
I'm just going to like pick a Saturday and knock out like 8 people and do like 8-show season. And, you know, so yeah. Anyways, I'm getting excited.
No, good. So, you're a student of the people. Of course you're getting excited.
Yeah.
Just like you said.
Yeah. So you're going to have to be on it.
Oh, boy.
It's going to be cool. You know, it's going to have like a heart to heart feel. I don't know if you've watched Kevin's podcast. Yeah. I love the conversations that he's having. And I love that he's having them with his friends. And I'm like, that's really cool. Cause I'm going to have mine with my friends, but they're not necessarily, everyone's not a celebrity. So like, I think it's going to really resonate with people. Just like, yo, just people are doing dope things and they're just dope people. And that's it.
And you can learn from everyone. There is something to learn from everyone.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm excited.
I'm excited for you. You've been talking about this. I remember we talked about this in like our first lunch.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It finally, you know, the idea finally fully formed.
Yeah.
And, you know, even to the, what I wanted the set to look like with the chairs. Mm-hmm. And so it's got these turquoise chairs. It's going to be so cool.
Ooh, turquoise. I was thinking red. So turquoise,
No. Okay. So it's crazy. I'm a Kappa, but my favorite color is blue and shades of blue. And so like you'll see it sooner or later, because I think I'm going to try to have people over at some point over the holiday season just for a drink or something. But my house is blue. My house is, my inside is painted blue. So, you know, psychology of color.
You see this? Man, I'm just grateful I get to know you. Yep, I was a fellow. Yep.
You're silly.
It's the truth. It's the truth, man. It's the truth. So
I got to get you some dates, but I got to get it figured out. But in March, I'm bringing back an event that's called Women, Wine, and Wisdom.
Ooh.
So I want to talk to you about hosting, facilitating the conversation. It'll be in March. That's what I was telling you about before. Like, hey, I got something I want you to do next year. Because it's not appropriate for it to be Women, Wine, and Wisdom and me asking the questions. So, but it will be a dope curated conversation with like 5 to 6 women. And there'll be women there. There'll be wine there. It'll be a cool venue. The last one I did was before COVID, and it was so dope. And so I'm excited to bring it back.
Doc. Oh my goodness. Yeah, well, thank you for thinking of me.
Mm-hmm. So I'll get you the date. It'll be in March.
Okay.
I'll get you the date and make sure you're available.
Oh my gosh. So. Okay. Ooh, thank you. Okay.
All right.
Yeah, you gotta. All right. I'm cutting it off. I cut my
cool. Off. Cool. I know you got a lot of editing to do because we just aren't here chatting.
I know. It's okay. It's okay. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Ross, and the audience for listening to this conversation. Thank you for all that you do to support us, the Black community, Black leaders here in Colorado and beyond now. And I'm so excited to see what happens in the next few years in this reflection chapter. And as you get to act more in your purpose with the Petro fueling you. So thank you for your time. Thank you, listeners. We'll see you next time.
Right on. Thanks for having me.